chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make heaven in the middle of it. Rest make heaven in the middle. We are. Rest make heaven.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Charlotte Littlefield is off tonight. We've got one of the finest guests this evening. My gosh, he's written several books. And we're going to discuss primarily one of those books tonight, Technocracy Rising. And welcome to our program, Patrick Wood.
Thanks, George. Good to be back with you again.
Okay, boy, it's really always enjoyable when we have these interviews and so forth. Now, tell our listening audience, people that haven't heard you before on our program, a little bit about your background and that first book also. Don't leave that one out.
Well, that's really what started it all, George. Back in the late 1970s and early 1980s, I was paired up back then with a gentleman by the name of Anthony Sutton, who was a prolific author in those days, a scholar that was a research fellow at the Hoover Institution for War, Peace, and Revolution for several years until he got kicked out, or fired, I should say, by the president of Stanford University, which at the time was David Packard. And David Packard was a member of the Trilateral Commission, we found out soon after. And Tony Sutton and I had both been tracking the machinations of the new organization in those days called the Trilateral Commission. It had been founded in 1973 by David Rockefeller and Zbigniew Brzezinski. And we met and agreed that the story was so big that we had to write about it. We had to do something about it. So we did. We started a newsletter. We ultimately wrote two books, volumes 1 and 2 of Trilaterals Over Washington. And we chronicled what the Trilateral Commission called their new international economic order. Over the years, we never really fully understood what that meant, I don't think, looking backwards, but when I discovered technocracy several years ago, I realized that technocracy was the economic model that the Trilateral Commission had adopted as its new international economic order. And where did technocracy come from? Well, it was actually a movement back in the 1930s during the heat of the Depression. And scientists and engineers at prominent universities got together and said, we need to fix this. We're going to create a new economic system, and we're going to call it technocracy. And they did. And they defined for the first time in human history an alternative economic system to free enterprise and capitalism. And they called it technocracy. It was no small movement either. They had over 500,000 card-carrying members at one point in the United States, many of them in the West and all throughout Canada. And it was quite a big movement, and they really wanted to replace capitalism and free enterprise with this technocracy system. And as far as this is going to relate, we'll talk about as it relates to the conference coming up on Sunday, they specified very specifically that this economic system would be the lifeblood of it, I should say, would be an energy-based currency. As a revolutionary concept back then, and as a revolutionary concept today. So that's kind of a little history.
Well, I tell you what, you're going to be, I think you're going to be Skyped in on this conference that is coming up. It's Saturday and Sunday, and it's called the Breakthrough Energy Movement Conference 2016. It's going to be in Bastrop, Texas, and it's early 8:30 Saturday morning. You can go down there to the Bastrop Convention Center and pay for a ticket and get in and have two really fine days of fine speakers. Now, Now, you said that this early formation of technocracy, okay, why did it not take off at that time? You said back in the 30s, was there a reason why it was stymied or did not get going back then?
There was a couple of reasons, I think, that it got generally rejected by the American populace. However, even having said that, there are still original technocrats around today. The original organizations still exist. They never got any money. Part of the problem was they never got any money back in those days from people like the Rockefeller, the Carnegies, the Mellons, and so on. And without that kind of money, and it's very hard to survive, you know, as an ideological movement. They did pretty well up all the way through the 30s and into the 40s. But as a movement, it kind of fizzled. The other thing besides lack of money that gave Americans a bad taste in their mouth was that the director of operations of Technocracy, Inc. decided that the organization needed a paramilitary look to itself. And so he being an aeronautical engineer with an airplane company that was linked tightly to Nazi Germany, and he was very pro-Nazi, apparently, he borrowed the look from one of the German Secret Service units. And it was a double-breasted suit, gray in color, gray hat. The ladies wore gray suits with skirts and double-breasted top as well. And they all dressed the same, and they all had their little logo button, which is the Monad symbol that they wore on their lapel. And when World War II broke out, Americans kind of made that association. And I have to say, they weren't necessarily a Nazi group, right? But people look at pictures, and they see the pictures in the newspaper, and then they see these people marching around in the streets, and it's like, oh, that sure looks like something fishy going on here.
Right.
So that was another reason. And interestingly enough, in Canada, technocracy was outlawed for 2 years during World War II for that very reason. I think it probably was a mistaken identity, but it didn't matter. The Canadians saw enough connection between the look and feel of technocracy in North America and Nazi Germany in Europe that they said, no, we're not going to allow you to walk the streets or have meetings or anything else. So they completely shut them down for 2 years, and it was illegal. So that was another reason. You know, Americans saw that happen, too, and they saw, I don't know. You know, maybe they're not Nazis, but something's sure fishy, and if Canada outlaws them, for Pete's sake, got to be something wrong there, right?
Right, right. What, we went through World War II, and then there's this Operation Paperclip, and evidently we brought a lot of German scientists and psychologists to this country. Did they pick up this technocracy movement after World War II, or how did that play into technocracy?
Well, many of those scientists that came back came to America under Operation Paperclip, which was a top secret operation, by the way. Only recently were those papers released to the public domain. But back then, it was completely secret. After World War II, when Nazi Germany was conquered, the German politicians and some of the military leaders, many of the military leaders, were carted off to Nuremberg to stand trial for war crimes. And many got stiff prison sentences. Many of them were executed. But all of the scientists and engineers that did the background stuff during the Nazi Germany experience, they got off scot-free. They were brought to America under this secret program called Operation Paperclip. There are 1,600 scientists and engineers, and their backgrounds were essentially sanitized. They were given top-level positions in laboratories, government laboratories, and the military research organizations and so on around the country. I believe they're all dead at this point, but, passed on. But the key to remember is that, or to notice, is that back in the early days of technocracy in 1932 and 3, as soon as the organization in the United States was formed, a parallel organization was formed in Germany. And it was called in German, the Technocracy Society. And there was apparently no direct organizational link. Like one guy didn't run both of them. However, the German iteration of Technocracy republished the American magazine in German.
Really?
And So they were on the same page ideologically, and that was to use science to create a socially engineered society. And this was their goal. And when Hitler rose to power, he axed the official organization of Technocracy over there because he didn't want any competition. On the other hand, Hitler loved science, and he used the technocrats all the way through World War II to help him to conquer Europe for the sake of environmentalism. And these technocrats, after the war, were never held to account for their part in things like Auschwitz and, you know, some of the other forced labor camps and stuff, and industry. They were sanitized, as I said, came back to the United States. And my guess was, George, that there probably was maybe a little homecoming party for some of those people.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
Hey, haven't talked to you in 10 years.
Yeah.
whatever your name was, Helmut, haven't seen you for a long time. How
right.
you doing? And,
yeah.
You know, they basically picked up in America and carried on their technocrat work in America to bring technology to fruit, to serve the government and to serve their technocrat outcomes that they had that they were working on. And again, that was to create a new economic order called technocracy. It was a pretty amazing story when you look back historically on it.
Yes, it is. Some people have characterized what we're moving into as a scientific dictatorship. I guess that fits perfectly in with what you're saying, doesn't it?
Well, you know, if nobody would believe me, that or you, for that matter, that this is a scientific dictatorship in the making, all you have to do is go down to a used bookstore and buy a copy of Brave New World that was written by Aldous Huxley. And you'll find out whether technocracy is headed towards a scientific dictatorship or not, and I'll tell you why. Huxley wrote his book, Brave New World, in 1932. He was a Brit looking into the United States through Columbia University. That's where technocracy was in 1932, at Columbia University. And so Huxley looked at it, and he said, there's a book in this. I know there's a book in this. And he wrote this book called Brave New World, looking straight at technocracy. And he obviously determined that it was headed for scientific dictatorship. There was no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And so anybody can read that book, and maybe you'll believe Huxley if you read him. If nothing else, it'll scare the pants off of you if you read it. Then George Orwell came along in 1948, and he wrote his book, 1984. It was a different perspective on scientific dictatorship, for sure. But Orwell was also looking at technocracy when he got the idea for his book, 1984.
Oh, my gosh.
So there you go. I mean, this is just the way it was. Everybody's forgotten this if they ever knew it in the first place. And we in this day can go back and read those fictional works, which were based in some part of reality, and we can find out what great minds thought about technocracy at the time.
Right.
They're back.
What is it that is one of our weaknesses or human nature that we strive to increase our power and dominance over one another? Is that sort of what leads to all these different dictatorships and despots or what?
Well, you know, you can't really call a technocrat a despot in the sense of a Saddam Hussein or Idi Amin and from Uganda or whoever, you know, some of the worst dictators in history. What these technocrats set out to do was to create a system that would regulate society scientifically. And this had never been done before. You know, dictators were always just dictators. You know, if somebody doesn't like your face, if the dictator doesn't like your face, it's off with your head. Won't look at your face anymore. And there's been plenty of dictators like that over history. But the technocrats defined themselves along the way very clearly. Scientists and engineers are prone to do that. In 1938, the Technocrat magazine, which is their main organ at the time, defined technocracy like this. And this is a direct quote from the magazine. Technocracy is the science of social engineering, the scientific operation of the entire social mechanism to produce and distribute goods and services to the entire population. Close quote. That's what they said they were going to do. And this is what they're doing today. It's about social engineering. It's about what they call the science of social engineering. They want to use science to manipulate you and me to do what they want you to do. And you can also see the economic aspect of this. This was not a political coup at all. This was an economic takeover, if you will, or an economic sea change. They believed that capitalism was going to die because of the Great Depression, and they believed that they and only they were capable of creating an alternative economic system that could take over when capitalism died. That's why they wrote an economic system. They could have written a political system. They wrote an economic system. And by the way, they said that the economic system didn't need politicians. It would stand on its own as its own self-regulated system. And so they actually encouraged FDR in those days when FDR was elected to declare himself dictator to implement technocracy. They wrote about that openly. They also requested of him to simply dismiss Congress because they were useless buffoons anyway. This was radical, George. I'm telling you.
Now there was that fascist takeover out of Chicago and New York, and that Smedley Butler exposed. That's about the same time, isn't it? Isn't that the same? Are these the same people?
That's about the same time, and unquestionably, some of the people involved in the technocracy movement were part of that effort.
Yeah, I would think so, because it fits their plan, right? The overall plan.
It does, but they would be careful in America, at least, not to identify themselves as fascists. I mean, there's still a lot of similarities, and of course the role of technocrats in Germany, which was a fascist movement. You know, as well,
right.
if the shoe fits, you know.
But evidently Mazzini, Giuseppe Mazzini, early on, 1880s, defined fascism back there as a partnership between the guilds and the government. Now, if you take the guilds out and put the international, transnational corporations in there dominating, but in a somewhat of a public-private partnership with the governments, that's about it. That's what we've seen happen, it looks like.
Well, you know, it's interesting that the large global corporations that we don't necessarily, learn to love, like the Monsantos, the GEs, the big computer companies like IBM and so on. These companies are on the outside of government looking in on one hand. On the other hand, they're run, all of them are run exactly like a technocracy would be run. They're very autocratic. You do exactly what they say or else you're fired. You're only as good as the last idea that you had. There's no loyalty whatsoever to you as a person. You're just an asset.
Right.
And, if you stop performing or if they don't need you anymore, you're out the door, sayonara, and pick up your box right now and leave. The giant corporations of the world are run very much like technocrats would like to run society. Obviously, the corporations of the world don't run society. Not altogether they don't, but their methods and practices are the genesis of those practices are seen in the heads of technocrats from the beginning. For instance, Taylorism, the guy that invented project management skills way back in the early 1900s. Taylorism was what brought the, you know, brought Ford Motor, for instance, into the 20th century by organizing tasks and routine, you know, assembly lines and time and motion studies and stuff like that. These techniques have been used throughout the corporate world. But what the greater risk is, George, is not from the corporations. It's from the hardcore technocrats that are embedded within governments that have no accountability and they have no transparency whatsoever. They're there. You can't even hardly find them. I'll give you an example. Just imagine who writes the regulations at the EPA. That's the Environmental Protection Agency. That are killing ranchers and farmers and companies across the country. Who writes these regulations? Who actually puts the pen to the paper to come up with these regulations? You see, this is not a political process, obviously. Nobody voted on this garbage.
Right.
But these people are in there, and they're creating these policies, and they are unified policy. This is the fingerprint on how you can tell they're unified. They're unified because they're echoing the same line that we see from the United Nations on environmental policy. It's the same stuff. And so how do you get technocrats on the inside of a government like ours? And they're in every government, not just ours. But how do you put the finger on them for lifting their policies from the larger organization like like, for instance, the United Nations, or from any one of the number of NGOs, that's non-governmental organizations, that are dedicated towards radical environmentalism. Well, like the Nature Conservancy, for instance. You know, there's collusion that goes on continuously between the technocrats that are buried in the bowels of our government and these various organizations. They're the ones that are writing this stuff, and nobody's paying attention to them, George. Nobody even sees that they're there. But they are, because we seem to see the fruit of their labor. I believe this is the greater danger right now to America and the world than are just the multinational corporations by themselves. That's not to say they're not a serious threat. They are. But you get my point.
I think so.
We know who they are. We know who IBM is.
How would expand about profiling this in these types of individuals who are, say, buried, embedded in these organizations? What's their psychology and their political idea? Things like this, would they be like on the Marxist communist side, or what? Or more of a planned engineered society? Or more scientific based? Or how would you describe an individual that is sympathetic to technocracy?
Well, they're going to be sold out to science, number one.
Right.
Not necessarily real science. In many cases, it's flat out, you know, pseudoscience, or in some cases, it's just fantasy land.
Sure.
But they say that they're sold out to science. You'll find a mindset for radical environmentalism. Okay. In other words, there's the religious aspect of worshiping the earth, and a belief that man is a scourge on the earth, and man needs to be moderated and controlled in order for the earth to survive.
Okay.
And you also see a decided economic bent to what they're doing. In other words, they always want you to change your economic behavior. That's another tell. They want you to change your economic behavior. So in the case of destroying the oil and gas industry and the coal industry, Their attempt, in their mind, their attempt is to change your economic behavior towards energy and towards what you buy and sell or do. Getting cars off the road by regulation. Well, okay, they say they want to reduce carbon dioxide or carbon monoxide in the atmosphere, but in fact they want to get you off the road and make you live in the city where you could take light rail to work or ride a bicycle.
Right.
See, they want you to change your economic behavior.
Right.
You see that consistently. It's a consistent fingerprint of the technocratic mindset. It's not a political issue ever, really. It's an economic issue. All of these types of things boil down to some economic behavior change.
Would you call a person a control freak or something that just obsessed with controlling others? Is that one of their traits, you think, of a profile of someone like that?
It's hard to say that is an obvious characteristic on the surface of it. It may not be at all. My guess is, of the people that I have met that seem to fit this pattern, they're often the geeky type, you know, the reticent ones, the shy ones.
Yeah, okay.
that don't necessarily have a great personality or an outgoing social attitude about anything.
Okay.
They're the ones that kind of are always, you know, darting their eyes around and looking over their shoulders for no good reason. But they don't really fit the mold of just out-and-out pathological control freaks.
Okay.
They think they're doing the world a favor by bringing science into the realm of social management, social engineering.
Okay.
They think they're doing the world a favor. They're not. But the lie of it is they're not. They're not. And everywhere you look, this is an economic issue again. Remember. Everywhere you look to see where this stuff touches, and the United Nations, by the way, calls it sustainable development or green economy. It's the same thing,
okay.
Technocracy.
Sure.
Everywhere you see these economic policies touch, you'll see a pocket of destruction very quickly. This has happened all over the world. It hasn't happened to the extent that people are alarmed that the world is falling apart. But I have noticed it as one who studied economics for 40 years. Everywhere I see these policies being implemented, I see pockets of destruction, of economic destruction and despair. If you look at the wind power industry right now.
Okay.
Everybody is just, oh, that's the best thing that ever happened. We're going to make trillions off of wind power. We're going to replace coal. We're going to replace natural gas and oil. All we got to do is build these windmills. And so they ran off and built windmills. Well, okay. How about the thousands and thousands now of abandoned windmills in California that are just sitting there rusting, collecting dust? They aren't working. They'll never probably be torn down. They'll just fall over and be an eyesore for a very long time. You've got Germany that just pulled its government subsidy or investment in the wind industry in Germany, where they tried to make a go of it. It was a $1.1 trillion program that Germany had implemented for wind power. They're pulling the plug on it, and it's going to be gone by 2019. Look at Denmark. Denmark is the world leader on wind power. They went gung-ho like Germany did into it, and some 42% of their energy comes from wind power. Much of it is an offshore, out in the ocean, towers coming up. It's just amazing how they've engineered these things. But after several years now of investing in these wind power things, Denmark has finally realized we can't do this. It's too bloody expensive. And they're creating energy that is like 600 times more expensive than other sources of energy right today, like nuclear power and like oil and coal and natural gas. And so Denmark is going to pull the plug on its wind power generation. And we've seen the same thing happen with solar power as well. It's on the rocks all over the world. Now, these are two examples I throw out. To show you that the best laid plans of technocrats wind up in total train wreck status within a few short years. And that's just a start. If you look at what the United Nations has done with global warming and all the bad investments being made in various projects around the world, you conclude at the end of just looking at it, the world is in for a heap of trouble when all this stuff is brought to account. There's going to be a day when there's going to be train wrecks all over the world.
Right.
But it's an economic issue.
Yeah, you see this electronic money proceeding.
Mm-hmm.
You see the chipping of people. And then you see these smart meters. I mean, all of those are telltale signs that we're proceeding towards this technocracy, right?
Well, you're right. And it just happens to be that smart grid and smart meters are one of my big one of the things I talk about a lot, because controlling energy was at the very core of technocracy, even starting back in the 1930s.
Okay.
Right? I mean, this was the nut of the whole economic system, was energy. And so when they wrote their handbook, it was like a by-the-by, they call it the Technocracy Study Course. When they wrote their book back in 1934, they listed seven requirements that would be necessary for technocracy to work. It's just seven. Just seven requirements. The engineers are like that. The first two requirements that they wrote down, very short, direct quote, I'll read them right now. Number one requirement, quote, register on a continuous 24-hour-per-day basis the total net conversion of energy. Number two, quote, by means of the registration of energy converted and consumed, make possible a balanced load, close quote. There you have the specification for smart grid today. I could have written this last year. I would have written it, said the exact same thing. Balanced load. Every utility company in the country is talking about balanced load. They're going to balance. They need to balance load. Well, I know they didn't all go back and read this technocracy study course from 1934. But I'll tell you, somebody did. Somebody did within the bowels of the Trilateral Commission read this stuff. They studied it, and they read it, and they said, yes, this economic system will work, and will take over the whole world as a result by getting a hold of all the resources of the world. But when you see such a specific definition of smart grid coming from almost 100 years ago, 80 years ago, you have to sit up and pay attention. Got to take notice. This is where it came from. Even though it was 2009 that President Obama first implemented smart grid in our country. He did it with grants. He did it with stimulus money that came out of the last financial crash. And that stimulus money gave hundreds of millions of dollars to utility companies to kickstart smart grid, which they could never get kickstarted before because public didn't want it. They tried for 10 years. Public didn't want anything to do with it. But it got forced down our throat by Obama coming to the Energy Department, or Department of Energy, Washington. And that's how we happen to have smart grid today. You say, well, that's interesting. I wonder who did that. I'll tell you why I got excited about smart grid, completely excited. I started looking around the world at different countries because they were all doing smart grid at the same time in 2009. They were all funded with stimulus money from the various countries that smart grid is being implemented. It was all over Europe. It was England. It was China. It was India, Mexico even, Canada. Stimulus money was being spent fast and loose by all these countries to implement smart grid at the same time. That told me something. That was huge, huge. It wasn't just here. It was all over the world. And you have to ask, because of that, what the heck are they doing? Why are they doing this? Well, when I then discovered that there was a global smart grid being designed and engineered by undoubtedly people like technocrats, that they were finding ways to tie the entire global energy network together into a single point of control, at that point, I felt like I was almost staring into the face of hell.
Right.
It's like, oh, crud, this is not good. But the global smart grid today is alive and well. It's progressing all over the planet. And we see it here in America. It's huge. And it got its genesis back in 1934 with Technocracy, Inc. They wrote about it back then. They didn't have the means to do it then. But they wrote about it back then. It said, we need to control energy. It's going to be the lifeblood of our economic system. And that's why it occupied the first two slots in their list of requirements back then.
It looks like to me, Patrick, that this, you know, we have these credit scores. Well, what's this new social score that's being proffered around that we ought to start doing? Are they going to give us a number? And then that number will tell people how much energy that we've used or abused or whatever. Yeah, is that just another one of the ripples in this thing?
Well, it absolutely is. And we see, I expect this is already being done. It's just, we're just not being told about it yet.
Right.
But they're doing it in China right now. They've designed
a
social score for their citizens.
Social score, that's it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, there's no doubt they're doing something like that today, but it's nowhere where it's going to be. Just give them more time to work it out. And, you know, I think we're going to see that kind of calculation going on a real-time basis. I'll give you an example. Let's say you call up, say a family member passes away in Chicago.
Right.
And you got to get up there lickety-split. So you go online to Expedia or whatever you do, airline, maybe directly airline, you go to American Airlines, whatever. And you get all the way, you pick a flight, you get all the way down, you're going to click buy, you know, you got it all picked out, the time, schedule, all that stuff, you click buy. And a notice comes up on the screen to you. Dear George, we thank you for your business, but our records show that your carbon footprint has been exceeded for the last 3 months in a row. And therefore, we cannot sell you a ticket today. But if you can do this and that and such to lower your carbon footprint in the next 30 days, we'd be happy to sell you a ticket.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah, right.
This is where this is headed, George. I'm not kidding.
No, exactly where it's headed. It's headed, in other words, there's a system that's getting bigger and bigger and more repressive. If you don't go along with the system, these methods are to identify you and then force you back into control by the system.
That's right. You know, this is such a religious experience. You know, the Portland, Oregon, which has always long been a bastion of liberalism. Portland is another trip for sure.
Right.
The Portland Public School Board just this month passed a ruling that all textbooks will be removed from their school system that do not support climate change.
My gosh.
They're taking them out of, you know, we could call this in historical terms, call this a book burning.
Yeah, exactly.
Burn all the books they don't like, you know, they don't agree with.
Yeah, just throw them out the window, yeah.
This is the school board. Now, you know, I'm not saying that the school board is full of technocrats, I don't know, but they have drunk the Kool-Aid. They have eaten the blue pill.
now you make an important point. There are people out there that I've listened to for years that says that American, and not only American, but the world population are under certain influences. They're almost like a sickness of some kind. Would you characterize it in that way or what?
Well, I the Bible calls it delusion.
Yeah, that I've written a book on that, on delusion, see?
I think that's the right term.
I think it is,
too. Here's the difference, I think, between deception and delusion. There is a difference.
Yeah.
When you're deceived, like if you see a magician, it's pretty easy to deceive somebody, you know, a good magician.
Right.
But if the magician shows you how he did the trick,
right,
will you ever be deceived again? No. You'll know. I mean, he could do that trick 100 times again right in front of you, and you say, come on, I know what you're doing. You can't deceive me twice. I've seen the trick, I understand the trick, and I'm no longer deceived. A delusion, on the other hand, maintains the deception in the face of clear evidence to the contrary.
Yeah.
That's the difference between deception and delusion. So somebody that's deluded can watch the same trick 100 times, even though he's been explained to him how it's done, will watch the trick the other 99 times and say, that's amazing. It must be magic.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, one of the definitions is when you delude someone, you trick someone. That's one of the definitions.
Well, it is, I believe it's beyond just tricking somebody.
It's propaganda, it's persuasion, it's mind control, it's education, it's a lot of different confluences of coming together on a synergistic basis. That's what I see. But there's no good outcome.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah, there is no good outcome to it. Okay. But let's take, for instance, the Portland Public School Board.
Okay.
They publicly made their decision where they stand. Now they
right.
You know, they said it. We're going to ban all books that don't support climate change, and we're just going to get rid of them. No more papers on campus. Nothing like that. Taking it all out.
Oh,
raiding the libraries,
we'll
whatever.
Stick your head in the sand. Yeah.
Now let's say, and they're deceived on one hand because we know the science actually says something else.
Right.
But let's say that I could go and have a four-hour presentation in front of that school board right now. I could go there with all the evidence I have, or maybe take the world's best climatological expert with me to tell them, to educate them on why climate change science is not settled, like Al Gore says, and give them hardcore evidence from legitimate scientists, multiple, you know, PhDs, whatever, work for a whole career, university, and explain to them in 4 hours why their position is wrong. Now, I ask this question. I've given my presentation. I ask this question. Do you think they would be persuaded to change their position and reverse their ruling? Or do you think they would continue with their ruling after a four-hour explanation from top experts in the world? I would suggest to you that they would not reverse their ruling, but that they would tell us to get the heck out of their school. You know, whatever. Like, hit the road, Toad.
Yeah.
We know you're the enemy. Hit the road. Now, that's a sign of a person in my mind who is delusional, because they have been presented with clear evidence that their position is wrong, but they continue to maintain that they're right.
Yeah.
This is the danger. This is the danger of this kind of stuff. When people get delusional, evidence to the contrary does not persuade them that they're wrong. You can't change their mind. It's become a religious experience almost to them. You just cannot change their mind.
Well, what I say, Patrick, is that the false self, the ego state, though, continues the deluded state. And yep. What I say, and it's fueled by hate and resentment, and that's the way most of everyone is controlled. And then I say in my little book, to forgive is to come out of that state. And you dissolve that false self and that ego state, and you become more objective and less delusional then. That's what I say. That's what I think.
Yeah, yeah.
See?
Well, the people like this now are in a majority out there of people who are running the world.
Well, they're hating those people that are on the opposite side. So they're It's cultic. It's become like a cult. See, They're gathering together, and they're right, and that other group over there, they're a bunch of idiots, but they hate them, and that fuels and controls and continues the ego, delusional, false self state.
That's right. And now people like Al Gore have said point blank that climate deniers like maybe you and I deserve to be punished because we don't believe like Al Gore.
Well, that gets back to this system. If you're against the system overall, that the system has set out these precepts, these principles. And if you go against the system, then you're to be ostracized and to be punished and very severely, or cut off or driven from the earth, see? You know what I mean?
That's right. That's right.
This thing is so evil, but the individuals out there, the public at large, is just not catching on to this. Doesn't seem
No, they're not. They're not. They're buying. And if anything, they're buying into it and saying, "Oh, we need to save the planet."
Yeah, we need to. And they have Earth Day. We just love Earth. You know what I mean? They're just falling for all of this manipulation. That so, I don't know. You know, to me, it's so childish and so transparent. But you've studied this. See, you're not 18 years old, and I'm not either. See, so it takes something to trick us, to delude us. We're no longer delusional. We might have been when we were younger, but not today.
That's right.
See what I mean?
You're exactly right. Yeah, we've been fooled so many times.
I was fooled like they are today, you know. But I came out of it. But my coming out of it was through forgiveness and Christian principles. But today people turn their back on Christian principles and stuff. Power and dominance.
Yeah.
And stuff and all that money, see, is dominant mammon, power, money, force, see, you know the ultimate fight or something. That it's all physical and it's not spiritual with some people, see.
That's right. Yeah, I would encourage people, listeners to this program, to go to technocracy.news, which is my website that explains a lot of this stuff and whatever, and look at some of the stories on there that I have cherry-picked, if you will, from around the world on stuff that's going on that showcases this technocracy model that we're talking about today.
We
could talk about it, you know, and give a couple of examples here and there, but I know people aren't going to get it if they're struggling with what we're talking about. They're not going to get it until they kind of go out and look at some more stories.
Yes.
And hear what these people are saying. It's not just what we're saying. We could write a book. Well, I did write a book.
Yeah, me too.
You don't have to listen to me, but at least you need to go listen to the people who are trying to sink our ship. You need to listen to what the United Nations is saying. You need to listen to what the intelligence community is telling us, or what they're saying about controlling all of society.
Right.
And listen to watch their lips move as they speak these crazy, crazy things. And it will amaze you. You'll say, how can somebody say that? And you know what? If it was just two hobos that met out by the train track and had a cigar and talked about some crazy stuff, who cares? You know, I mean, it's just a couple of hobos talking up by the train track. It's a free country. They can do whatever they want to do. Let's say they were talking about robbing a bank. Well, you know, if they're just joking, like some people might do, if they're just joking about, well, you know, it'd be funny to rob a bank, you know, if they can you imagine this, and they're talking about it, it's still just talk. It's just two guys blowing off steam, and people do it all the time. But listen, when you make the first move to go rob that bank, now it's a whole other story. Now, You've passed over the conspiracy phase and you've entered into the actually going to do it. Now that's when a crime is committed, when you make your first move to do something like that.
Sure.
Now we're not talking about a bunch of hobos down by the train track here on all this technocracy stuff. They're not just a bunch of people that are down and outers or whatever. These are the professors at the leading universities around the world. These are people embedded in our government at top regulatory positions. These are people across Europe that created the European Union. These are people for sure in giant corporations around the world that are pushing the world towards technocracy as well. These are not just a few, you know, a bunch of hobos talking down by the train track.
Well, they've been educated into a system of delusion that they are trapped into.
They are, and they have the money to carry out what they're doing, and they are carrying it out.
The jobs that they have continue to the delusion, see?
That's right. So, you know, so here we are with all these people talking about this stuff, and for some reason Americans are kind of delusional in this sense, that they see the lips move. They see these people's lips move.
Right.
They hear the words coming out of their lips. But for some reason, they just don't believe what they're hearing is true. It goes in one ear, picks up speed, and goes out the other side. And I tell you, this is a mindset that Americans have that they need to get rid of, for sure.
Right.
When you hear, let's say you're walking down the street and a mugger jumps out in front of you and says, "Stop right there," and he pulls out a gun. And he says, "If you don't do such and such, I'm going to shoot you dead right now." Now, most people would react in fear, of course. But, you know, maybe you're packing and you might want to confront him back and say, "Good luck with that, Charlie. My gun's bigger than yours." Or you might just cave and do what he wants and figure maybe he'll let you go. But one thing you're not going to do, for the most part, when you're in a situation like that where somebody just says something to you, you're not going to float into some liberal Alice in Wonderland world and say, "Gee, I think your problem is you just need to be loved more, sir. I'm having a bad day. Do you need a hug?"
Yeah.
You know, it's but this is how Americans are treating these people. You know, it's like, well, they're just misguided, or, you know, well, they're just university professors. Come on. A professor never does anything. You know, but here's a good one. I like this. Here's Christiana Figueres, head of climate change at the United Nations. She said last year, George, in a press conference, it's a direct quote. She says, quote, "This is the first time in the history of mankind that we're setting ourselves the task of intentionally, within a defined period of time, to change the economic development model that has been reigning for at least 150 years since the Industrial Revolution," close quote. She said that. You can go onto YouTube and watch her lips move. She spoke it in English in Europe, the press conference. She said that the United, and just, I'm not reading between the lines, she said that the United Nations has an intention. Well, what's their intention? Well, to replace capitalism for enterprise. Oh, that's all. And says they have a timeline. They have a defined period of time. Oh, they do. Is that schedule been published? Yeah, it has. Matter of fact, it's called the 2030 Agenda. It's right, all over the news.
Yeah.
You can go get it anywhere you want.
Paris, France.
And, oh, are they talking about free enterprise and capitalism? Oh, come on. They're not. They must be talking about some dictator in Africa or something, you know. But now, wait a minute. What is the only economic development model that's been reigning for 150 years since the Industrial Revolution? There's only one. There's only one. It's free enterprise and capitalism. That's it.
Right.
Okay, so here's a lady, the head person at the United Nations for Climate Change. She's the one that's driven all this stuff for the last several years at the UN. She says the United Nations is going to destroy capitalism and replace it with sustainable development, which is technocracy. Why don't people just believe that for what she said? And if they really understood what she said, why wouldn't they be up in arms saying, not just no, but heck no?
Right.
We're not going to let you do that. You're out of here, lady. But you see, people just, they read this, they listen to it. Oh, well, you know, maybe that's not what she meant. Surely she meant something else. Or she misspoke.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know what they say. But look. She gets the picture. She went on in that same press release or conference and said, "This is probably the most difficult task we've ever given ourselves, which is to intentionally transform the economic development model for the first time in human history." Close quote. You think she gets it?
Yeah.
She gets it.
Yeah, she gets
it. She knows what she said. She knows what she said.
Right.
But for some reason, people on the outside, that is, not on the inside of this whole, you know, climate change, sustainable development model, everybody else, us deniers out here, for some reason, don't take her at face value.
Right.
They're turning the world upside down, George.
I know, and it's, you stated earlier, delusion is a good point to make about these people, but it's been systematically and intentionally, they've been intentionally and systematically indoctrinated and conditioned, programmed into a state of delusion. That's the problem.
That's right. That's right.
And but it's so overwhelmingly powerful influence is the institutions where they have doctorates lecturing to you. See what I mean?
That's right.
You know, while some guy out here is just an individual speaking the truth is does not have the same credit, see? You know?
Yeah, that's right.
We're down to about 3.5 minutes now. Is there some closing comments you'd like to make, Patrick Wood, and to give us some of your websites again and stuff? And we need to talk about that conference a little bit taking place in Bastrop beginning tomorrow.
You bet. I will be speaking piped in via Skype, actually, to a big screen.
Sure.
And my part of the presentation is to talk about all this stuff, plus
sure.
the specific aspect of a carbon-based currency that was that is being talked about today in the modern world and that actually was conceived back in the 1930s. But people can go to technocracy.news. That's a new suffix, .news, not .com, technocracy.news. They'll find all these stories and more that we're talking about. I post stories every day with some comment to give context, but you can go and just get a goldmine of information there. And you'll see my book on the right-hand column, Technocracy Rising. And there's no substitute for reading a book. You can listen to me all day long. You can read every story on technocracy.news. But until you really read Technocracy Rising, you won't have all the dots connected like they need to be connected.
Right.
This book does.
Right. If you go to our site, thesecrettruth.com, you'll find all these click-offs right now. We put them up the other day. And you can go into Patrick Wood's site. But also, there's a global BEM.com site, which is the Breakthrough Energy Movement conference site this Saturday and Sunday in Bastrop. So go to that also, globalberm.com. And I want to thank you for being with us this evening. And we got into some different facets of this that were very, very interesting. And some of the stories that you have to tell about some of these countries and just the economic downfall and disaster that some of these, technocratic, experiments have caused is just overwhelmingly insightful.
Oh, thank you, George. I hate to say it, but we need to get off the couch. Every American needs to get off the couch and get out there and start walking in the streets.
Exactly. And again, Patrick Wood, thank you for being with us this evening. And all those click-offs are up there right now. And people can go to your site and order that book, Technocracy Rising, and come down to our conference this Saturday and Sunday. But thank you very much for being with us. And good night.
You're welcome, George. My pleasure.
Yeah, good night. Bye-bye.